Hello everyone and welcome back to Front Page Dub. My name is Cody Ojeda, joined once again, and we do apologize for the long break, but I am back. Matt Olson is back. Your favorite dub show is back. Matt, how you doing? How you feeling?
Yeah, feeling footy fresh on a Friday, which it is not the day that we're recording this.
I think because you said that now, we've got to kind of make sure this is published on a Friday, which does give me more time to edit, which means hopefully we're having a good episode. And look, to be fair, we're both in a good mood. There's been a lot of good football being played. Do apologise we've missed the last 5 weeks. We haven't actually recorded since Unite Round, mainly because life does get in the way. And unfortunately, we don't always have the facilities to be consistent, but we do have the facilities to give you great bloody content. And we are going to get into it, talking all things dub, and we're just going to start with basically where this league is at, because they do call this a chaos league for a reason. We spoke a lot about different things at different points of the season, Matt. One of the things that we spoke about very early on was Perth looking like they could be a title contender and really pushing City. We're at a stage where, obviously, there's only two rounds to go. There's a handful of teams that, unfortunately, at the time of recording, cannot make finals. Wellington, by the time this gets published, may be joining that group. Obviously, Newcastle Jets still kind of hanging by a thread. But Perth, who looked like they were going to be challenging Melbourne City at the time, who they've had a little bit of a fall off themselves, but looked like they were going to be challenging Melbourne City for a premiership title, have now, with two games to spare, been knocked out of any finals contention. Matt, obviously you're our resident Perth expert, which is why Perth, I'd say, getting a lot of love, but I don't think they're going to get a lot of love at the moment. They get a lot of attention on this podcast. But what in Christ has happened?
It's actually fairly simplistic. You watch the style of play that adapted, you know, around the time they started to fall off. They became quite insipid going forward. A lot of really stagnant movement, a lot of sort of adapting and changing the roles that certain players had within the team, certain players dropping deeper, you know, certain players being relied upon for their work rate in certain areas, certain players getting dropped to what, you know, used to be a lot more poignant in that forward pack. But I think just the biggest thing for me was once they realized there was a problem, Alex didn't really change things up. And I actually distinctly remember one night talking to him and he said something akin to, without saying it blatantly, but he's basically revealed that in one sense, we've been found out. And when you've been found out, you need a plan B. And the job is on us and in the press to sort of ask, well, what is the plan B? And I don't think there was ever an answer. Verbally or, you know, on the pitch. And ultimately that's where we have a team that I think has just accepted its fate. There was a night in particular where, they really failed to show up. I forget who the opponent was. Again, just because we haven't recorded, there's a lot of content to sort of go through off the top of my head. I want to say it was actually the Wellington game, wasn't it, where they've sort of come out and been easily second best.
3-1 loss to Wellington? Wellington's only away wins this season.
Yeah, it was. But the players were pissed off. And they usually do, like Perth's player-fan engagement has been top-notch my whole life. And this was one particular night where the players actually just straight up, you know, they obviously still went out and signed some autographs and took some photos and stuff, but they were drowned out and just, they weren't having it. So quite a few of the players didn't show up for that sort of fan engagement session thing that they do at the end of the game. And Alex, you know, he's really sort of wanted to take the whole line of, you know, that it belongs with me. But I think there are some players that really have to hold themselves accountable. Players that are usually very reliable, you know, the likes of Hannah Lowry and, you know, Sophia Sakalis has disappeared a lot in terms of her quality on an individual level. Susan Fonsoncam started the season really well. She kind of fell off. Millie Farrow's roles sort of changed what she was there to do in the team. They've ended up almost solely relying on her with long bowls and, you know, just playing really pathetic one route football. So Yeah, from top to bottom, just a team that's out of it, and a team that you saw even in their desperate hours of need. Now, I shouldn't be talking past tense, but I kind of already am, and I think we understand why. In their hour of need in some of these games, where the Wellington win at Mazo Park is, you got to go out and do that. There's no excuses. And this Western Sydney game, you've got to go out and do it. And they're still playing really pathetic one route football, not really offering anything on there. The intensity of the game is just not there at all. And that's a side that's done. And I think the rumours coming out of WA are honestly that Alex is going to depart at the end of the season because of this. It's unraveled really dramatically. I mean, this was a team, as I wrote at the start of the season in round two, this was a team that was destined to be top four, and they screwed it up. And I almost feel like it's better if they don't make the finals, because then you can tick boxes and go, this needs changing. This will change. There's something that we can do over the off season to work on these things and figure them out. It's a little bit more complicated if they end up making the six. They end up, almost winning a final out of nowhere through the lottery of it all.
They're out of contention. They can't make it anymore.
Yeah, I didn't even really do the math on that.
they're 6 points off six, but
okay.
They're three wins behind Wanderers, which means they can't catch up.
Yeah, see, I didn't even bother. I mean, bearing in mind I've got other duties covering rugby now, and I mean my weekend is literally so full on that, after the loss, I've not actually done the math and the permutations. I've just sort of chalked it in as, yeah, okay, that was glory again. So bear with me on that one. But yeah, what more do you say about it? It's just a team that's been found out, that's really lost their way, and yeah, there's a long off season going ahead. Ironically enough, when the men's program has sort of got it all together, because the season started the other way around, right? The women's program had everything together. Alan Stajic and the men were pointing fingers, and now they're the ones that actually look like they've got it all together under the new ownership. And the ship has sailed for Alex and Parkus and those girls, unfortunately.
It'll be interesting to see how the new ownership does impact that side. It'll be a shame that Alex leaves, if he does, of course, if that eventuates. There were times where things did look really, really good under him, and I think there is quality in him as a football coach. Unfortunately, things obviously can't be maintained forever, and as you said, when they get found out, that's kind of how the cookie crumbles, I guess. There's, I guess, another team that you can kind of mention in terms of the cookie crumbling, Canberra United. I don't know how they end up in the position they're in. I feel like I've got egg on my face as well, because I had this team to be a dark horse in the competition. They've ended up in a position where they're coming last, and almost deservedly so. Obviously, Adelaide can kind of impact that in some way, shape, or form. But you look at the way Canberra play, it's really, really interesting in a sense, because attack, they've got two of the best attackers in the competition. Michelle Heyman, top goal scorer as well, mind you. And Veza Milivojevic, who for me is probably the best creator in the competition. I don't know what the hell's happened with their back line. You've conceded 46 goals a season, but you're in a position where you're genuinely one of the best attacking teams in the competition. I think there's only one team that's actually scored more goals than Canberra this season, which, considering they do have a game in hand on a lot of teams in this competition as well, that is nuts to think about. How they're coming dead last, I don't want to use the word embarrassment, because I mean, it's a bit harsh, but it's really, really weird and kind of terrible on their part. It's probably even worse word than embarrassing. But Matt, a quick word on Canberra, I guess. What have you seen from this team? How the hell is this side coming last?
Have I not been proven right on like everything to do
why
with
did, Why did I ask you about this? I knew you'd come back at me with this.
No, but hold on. I actually want to point this out on like how front heavy they are. Can you do me a favor? Google this right now, because this is something I heard. I heard murmurs of this, and I wasn't sure if it was true. Look up Sydney FC's women's teams goal scored. Look up the Sydney FC men's teams goal scored. Add them together, and tell me the total number that you've got.
Sydney's women's teams goal scored and Sydney's men's team goal scored.
Yeah, just tell me, like, the whole franchise of Sydney.
Okay, 28 for their women's.
Yep.
39 for their men's.
Okay, so we're in the realms of about like 68, 67.
28 plus 39. You can't make me do math on record, man. This isn't good.
No,
28 plus 39,
69.
17. You're talking about 67.
67, 67. Canberra United on their own as a team that is probably going to be the wooden spooners this season, are at 35. 35, double that, it's 70. So Canberra on their lonesome as a team that's bottom of the ladder have scored over 50% of the goals that Sydney as a franchise have scored in the whole season. I really want that to put into perspective what's good and what works about this team. So before I get really smug with you and I say, oh, you know, look at me and I was saying this about how front heavy they are and that they don't really have a lot of talent in the team. Okay. But it actually is something that really speaks to a problem because when I think of a team that in 20 games has scored 35 goals, I think of a team that is almost certainly going to be in the finals. And here we see the complete opposite problem. But it's hard to have a retrospective conversation about this. I don't want to segue to something we're going to talk about later, which is what the APL have sort of come out and said about the future of both the Jets and Canberra. But if you are a Canberra United, you'd have to be asking some bigger level boardroom questions, and that is nigh on impossible to do right now. So with that considered, what does this team really do to sort of move itself on? If obviously they should be playing football next season, we don't believe that what's going on with the APL will be dramatic to the point where they fall in this forthcoming off season. I wouldn't have thought, especially with the support of the ACT government and go in Capital Football and all those relative parties, because the women's team is, have existed, you know, on their lonesome for a very, very long time, but they also have never really had that much stability. So when it comes to asking some really big questions about the way that they've set up and what sort of moves they can make in the offseason, it's going to be a very, very tricky thing to balance, isn't it?
Yeah, we'll get into that a little bit later. It still shocks me that this is a side at the foot of the ladder, considering they do have such a good attacking record. They do have a great side on paper. It does baffle me. Look, if you had told me they were going to miss finals and things would be fall a little bit by the wayside, I'm pretty sure our worst case scenario for them before we started the season was missing out on finals. It definitely wasn't the wooden spoon. So
No.
maybe it shows our knowledge a little bit. We'll focus on kind of this top six race because it's not even just the top six race. Even the title race is coming down to the wire, but we'll focus on that kind of top six first. Jets are 3 points away from the Wanderers. Wellington Phoenix are 8 points away, but do have an extra game. Unfortunately, by the time this goes live, we'll know their fate, so I don't really want to lean into them too much in case they do not win that game against Adelaide United midweek. But the battle between Wanderers and Jets, which I think is kind of the mainstay at the moment, it is a little bit intriguing. They both have similar paths to how this season ends, where they both have difficult teams to face, albeit at home, and they both have difficult away trips, albeit winnable games on their own. I think if you look at both of them, Newcastle Jets probably have it easier for both their games. But in saying that, the word coming out of the Wanderers base, at least when I've spoken to them, is that the destiny is basically in their own hands and they're happy with the position that they're in. If I'm Wanderers, I'm happy with the position that I'm in too. Unfortunately, you've got to have a team fighting for a title race coming to your ground, and then you have to go to another country. Whereas Jets, you've got Melbourne Victory, who, let's be real, are a good football team. Not going to discredit them, but probably aren't playing as good as what Western United are right now. Although, one win and they actually can go above them. But then they go to Adelaide the last round of the season, which isn't an easy place to go to. But you'd take that over a Wellington Phoenix
Here's
trip.
the thing. Can I just comment on that for a second?
Of
Because
course you can.
this is a Jets team, Cody, that just went to Western United, the first ever inaugural game at Tynedd in front of what is, for ALW standards, a massive crowd, right? Of over 2,000 people. They just went to the joint and scored three goals. Should they really be that intimidated on the final round of the season about going to Adelaide? No.
No, of course not.
And this is a Jets team that has some really fine talent. Should we Should we back them, all things considered? Because I mean, yeah, you are sort of, I guess there is a bit of precaution that you would have to say coming in the way of that Melbourne Victory game. And you never know, like I feel like with the Jets in their current guys, they're kind of more likely to fire up at home. But again, it's a fairly clinical Victory team that in their own right, when you think about it, there's 6 points between Victory and the Jets with a plus 12 goal difference, which is remarkable to think about. But they've sort of got to cover their own asses in that sense, the Victory, right? So they've got to actually kick in and get the result. And it makes things very, very complicated, and it softens the path quite a bit for that Wanderers team. But let's say, and I love that they're playing on the same day, on this forthcoming Saturday. Let's say they both lose those respective home games. So Victory go up, that's locked in. Then you get this sort of tense situation of Friday afternoon, the Jets in Adelaide. Saturday morning, Saturday afternoon for you on the East Coast, the Wanderers away to the Phoenix. Would you not back the Jets in that situation?
You probably would.
Yeah.
I think I look from my point of view. I think if Wanderers can, if Wanderers get over the top of Western United to win that game, they go to Wellington, at least get a point and secure finals football. Wanderers fail to win. I don't know what happens if it's a draw. I haven't really thought that far ahead. But Wanderers fail to win this game. They don't go and do well in Wellington. I think if there's one flaw in this Wanderers side, they do take a bit of time to get out of a rut. So one loss could potentially be disastrous at this point of the season. That's from
Can
my
I just
point of view.
ask, do you know off the top of your head with this weird thing about games won? Oh, Cody, this really opens it up. Because remember, the goal difference, regardless of how many they concede, if either lose, it doesn't mean anything, right? On the wins, the
Yeah.
Wanderers have 9 and the Jets have 8.
But if Jets
So,
win one more game than the Wanderers do in this period, they'll be on equal points and they'll be on equal
but remember the scenario I just explained?
Wanderers would lose their goal difference as well, I guess. It'd still come down to
Yeah,
goal difference.
I was more thinking they get the same amount of wins when they don't. Because if they both lose and then both win, respectively, you'd back the Jets more away to Adelaide than you would the Wanderers to Wellington.
When
But
you
like you're
point
saying, a
when
draw.
you talk about it in that context, sorry to bait in on you, but
Yeah.
they're one win off the Wanderers, but they're also one win off Melbourne Victory, who are 3 points ahead, 6 points ahead of them. Let's say Newcastle Jets win their last two games, one of them being against Melbourne Victory. Last round of the season, Newcastle Jets win,
Right.
Melbourne Victory. Who do they play in the last game? Sydney FC. If Melbourne Victory lose both those games and Newcastle Jets win both those games, goal difference comes out of the equation. Newcastle Jets
Victory,
will jump
victory,
it.
don't play final
And Victory's going to play finals
football.
football. And you know, the position that we're in
Wow.
right now, that's a realistic possibility too.
Wow. Wouldn't that be
These last
something?
two weeks are going to be great.
Wouldn't that be something?
It's, and you know what? Thinking about it, let's just say Wanderers basically just need a draw. And if Victory lose their last two games, Wanderers can still make finals football on
And
that basis.
it's so much more, put so much more
Okay, wait,
weight
no,
on
because
that.
Wanderers won't make up the points then. Sorry, never mind.
Right, yes, great. But it puts a lot more weight on this Victory Jets game than doesn't it, realizing that wins above their goal
Because
difference.
suddenly, the Jets are still 3 points out, but they have the same amount of wins. That
Because
plays
if
in
the
the Jets' hands.
Jets claim that win and then they claim the 10th game in Adelaide, could not
And
be
at
clear.
that time, let's wait. Sorry for the listeners. We're just kind of having a chat. We're unraveling this ourselves as well. Unfortunately, the Jets play that game on a Friday night. So, new Victory will go in knowing their fate, like if they need a win or not. And that'll probably give them a kick up the backside that they probably do need in that instance, which is a shame. I do. I'm a football purist in that sense. I wish all the games were played on at the same time on the last day. I know it affects viewing numbers and all that. Frankly, I don't give a fuck. Give us a bloody proper dub zone marathon of football. That'd be fantastic.
Okay. I didn't realize that was my
Yeah, I know you're
segue
making a
to it.
point. I feel bad that I was butting in on you.
No, because I'm going through like the fixtures and the permutations and stuff. Wellington Phoenix versus Adelaide United women on a Wednesday tomorrow. Just sorry, I'm just giving away what time we're recording.
Yeah,
That just seems like the most, like, obviously it's a reschedule for something that happened.
That was because it got explained, I think it was after the last time we recorded, actually. Or it, was, okay. It might have even been a...
Scrap this.
No, we can explain it, I guess. It's of the New Zealand squad going to the OFC Nations Cup.
Right, because it wasn't during the international break.
Yeah, because the OFC is one of the worst run football organisations in the world. And I say that living in a world with the APL.
Yeah, no, you're right. I'm just trying to, like, figure out. Like, Victory, if Victory miss out, their goal difference is still going to be very highly positive as well. Like,
they're the best attacking team in the competition. They're the only ones that have scored more than Canberra. Imagine the two best attacks in the competition. Don't make finals.
Yeah, I know. Some freaky things, you know, someone's got to call Ghostbusters or whatever, because some freaky things are about to go down. If the Wanderers and Jets finish on 10 wins each, I'm still kind of freaked out. Like, it's actually a possibility of happening. And that just speaks volumes.
Take that in consideration. If you had to pick two teams in the finals.
Can I actually change the conversation over, though?
Okay.
Does this not highlight how incredible the rise of, in contrast to the sort of the Phoenix and Glory who just fell apart, in contrast to Canberra who have like a bit of the product and didn't fully mold together. When we were doing our ratings for every team and we spoke about the ceiling, can we talk about the Mariners? Because how are they?
That was going to be the next conversation, to be fair.
Yeah, you know, but permutations aside, this is already a side that has secured the top six. This is already a side that I'm pretty sure we said their ceiling was about fourth or fifth, which they've now comfortably met. I don't know. Did you ever interview Emily Husband throughout the season?
I got one chat with her. Unfortunately, I couldn't record it because it wasn't just me in there.
Oh, okay.
But it was the Melbourne Victory game. They drew 1-1.
Yeah, okay. I think it's fair to say that there is a big element of sort of quiet achievers about that team. And I think it sort of sticks in line with what we were saying about them and their potential in the preseason. But the way it sort of molded together has been very, very special. So much so that we're talking about Victory being potentially seventh. We're talking about, you know, the Jets and the Wanderers who way back, you know, when we first started talking about this podcast and really talking publicly about these teams, the Jets and the Wanderers were two that we were asking the question, are they ever going to be competitive? And we're talking about them being in the finals. We're talking about a team that didn't even exist when this show started. Those three teams finishing ahead of Melbourne Victory, such an indictment. Such an indictment of the way that the Mariners have built this female women's program.
They do deserve a lot of credit. Whatever.
And I'm not going to lie, the impact that England had, we're actually seeing the legacy of the World Cup in real time, because England being in Gosford for camp actually had a big impact on the way that the Mariners got started up as a club. Let's not forget that as well.
In what way?
So the facilities that they permanently donated to the club, you know, the recommendations for coaching staff and player signings and things like that, that I know Emily Husband was in touch with some people from the FA on what she can do. At least I believe that happened at some point. But yeah, I mean, it is actually a broad question to ask about the Mariners and the way that they've been able to run as a club, because we know Sean Millencamp's over with the West Tigers in the National Rugby League now as well.
Wait, what?
Yeah, did you not know that?
I knew he left. I knew he was leaving the Mariners. Has he gone to the NRL?
He's gone to the NRL. Wow. And you know, I'm curious as to how they actually build a legacy for themselves now, because this could be a season where the women win an elimination final in their inaugural season, the men claim possibly a premiership and a continental title, something that's just unfathomable to think about. And you really have to ask some big questions about the way the Mariners are setting themselves up now, because we ironically enough haven't actually spoken about them in like the consistent results and the way that they've been good, just because in the month that we haven't recorded was the month where this all sort of came to fruition. I think that's actually a pretty fair assessment to make, right?
Well, they've always been decent. They have gone on a bit of a rise
They've been mid-table the whole season.
Yeah, you can say they're mid-table, you would say they're mid, though. Yeah. They've been decent. They've been good.
Yeah.
I guess we haven't really given them enough attention in a way, but...
No.
Yeah, I guess that's a fair assessment as well. But no, I don't think we've ever disrespected them at the same time, though, have we?
No, but I just, are there any players that I'm, again, I'm going to just do the sort of on the fly research because that's how this show works now. But if I'm to sort of have a word about the players that have stood out, I can think of a few names.
Casey
Peter
Dumont's
Trimas,
won them at
obviously.
least 7 to 9 points on her own this season. She definitely
Peter
won him a
Trimas.
point the day that I went to watch him against Melbourne Victory.
Yep. Peter Trimas has stood out so much that she's even bossed it at the international level as well.
Well, she was someone that I don't think would have even been in the frame to be in the under-20 squad yet when
Through
that
her
was
very, very
starting
good form for
qualifying.
the Mariners, yeah.
Now she's a starting player for him. We're
100%,
talking
yeah.
17 years old as well. She can get to another under-20s World Cup in 2 years.
And she's really sort of been a big part of how that team sort of molded its attack around, sort of jumping into the unknown as well. Which is, it's really, really good to sort of see that from them as well. If we take the 4-1 win at Canberra, obviously Rolla Badawiya scored as well. Kai Simon on the score sheet is interesting. Obviously, I've made some comments about Kai Simon on this last podcast that they happened.
Almost thought about that actually.
The American centre back Jackman. I remember reading something particularly fascinating about her and her career, but that was a sort of on location kind of thing. It's gone in the brain department, and it's sadly departed now. Izzy Gomez was someone that I touted. You remember at the start of the season, I mentioned sort of
Yep.
Sarah Langman was someone that could step up. Izzy Gomez was someone that was going to
You're
be an
kind
X
of
factor
right in
for
that
them as
Sarah
well.
Langman sense in the way that a keeper was going to step up and be key for Mariners this season, and it just happened to be Casey Dumont instead. I don't think at the time we were anticipating that signing to happen, but it's been brilliant work for
No.
him too.
No, exactly. I think Rolla Badawiya has probably been one of the biggest talents though as well. The Chinese Mongolian striker, I don't know how to say her name. She's been
Uri Gumula?
brilliant. Yeah,
I hope I haven't
her.
butchered that.
Yeah, no, that's why I refuse to say it. I actually had a senior women's football writer Neil Bennett turn to me, ask me one, what culture is that name, and two, how to pronounce it. And I was like, well, I understand that she's Mongolian Chinese, which to begin with, is like an insane ethnic makeup. But yeah, she's one of the only like non like how do you culturally even sort of she's like the non sort of native population of China. The word is getting away from me, but she's basically like one of the first non-Chinese people to represent China internationally in sport, let alone football. Very, very awesome story, and someone that I think probably adds a lot to that team behind closed doors because you're someone with a tiny bit of international experience as well, and when you look at how the team has been molded together to their strength, it's actually akin. I'll tell you, it's actually akin to the way that the Phoenix have molded together with their sort of misfits label, and this team has no talent at the start of the season, and all the things we said about them going forward, and then Chiefy's just turned that team into a very, very successful unit. I think it's fair to say that Emily Husband's done exactly the same thing because when you look at the individuals, when you look at the roles they play, their background that their footballs come from, and the way their team's molded together, it's a very, very contrasting dressing room, but one that works really well and one that set the team up in a big way.
Yeah, no, look, everything about that side has been absolutely fantastic. You can't knock a lot of it in reality. So, you know what? Full power to them. I really do hope that they, not just obviously they've got their finals spot secured, but it'd be cool to actually see them go on a nice deep run in it as well. I think you'd back them to make the semi-finals as well, depending on who they do play against. They may even be able to get further. I think whoever comes up against those. Obviously, those Sydney and Western games, when it comes to semi-finals, that's who I'm anticipating will be the top two. Those games are obviously going to be tough, and it could very well be a Sydney Western United final again. But you've got sides like the Mariners and possibly even the Jets, if they can make it, that do have ability to kind of upset the odds in that instance. I look at a side like Melbourne City, as much as they've done well to maintain their spot so far in the top three, although that may be in danger as well, considering City do have Mariners next. Mariners have a good opportunity to actually jump them. I wouldn't be worried if I'm a finals team and I get drawn, or the way the ladder finishes, I end up drawn against City. I think the last thing I'd want to talk about the ladder before we do move on, this kind of title race has opened up as much as other teams are in points within that space. Even Mariners technically could still fight for a title, depending on how other results go. Obviously, Sydney's game in hand against Canberra is going to play a big part in that. You'd think that they're going to run away with it eventually. But do you see a title race still on, or do you think Sydney are probably going to wrap it up come when's their game against Canberra? Sorry, let me just get the date. Come the 27th of March.
I'm not concerned about it. Can I tell you, I'm not concerned about it because I'm more than aware of what happened in the final series in this very competition last season. There was a bit of a mix-up. There were some crazy results. You know, there was Casey Dumont's penalty shootout heroics. And, you know, this is a pretty switched-on unit. Ante Juric is a very, very good coach. But in the case that Sydney run away with this, I mean, you know, a win would put them 4 points up, two games left. It's probably a done deal. And also when you actually factor in a lot of the sort of nature of the way that these team seasons have played out, Western actually started the season horrifically and had the inverse of Wellington and Perth. They found themselves playing some very good form. When they went top, everyone's initial reaction was, oh my God, how the hell are Western United on top? Where did that come from? Kind of thing, you know. Under Cat Smith, they've been very, very exciting.
That's a Cat Smith masterclass there, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it is. It is. We're talking about the Mariners and the way they've come into their own as well. It lines up some spectacular, and I mean just like saliva dripping from my mouth. that kind of just tantalizing aspect and nature of one-off football where it just works on paper. It just works. And I hope we get a final series that really delivers, so much so to the point where I don't even really care if City run away with the Premier's play, and I think that they will.
Say Sydney, sorry?
Sydney, yeah.
Yeah, I thought you said City for a sec. I was getting confused.
No. But Melbourne City, again, another really consistent team that you would back in a one-off scenario. So depending on how some of these elimination finals match up, Mariners playing either Jets or Wanderers in the 3v6 game would be just, wow. what a way to start the finals. Yeah.
And to be fair, let's just say it's a 3v6 and Wanderers come away with that. There's a realistic chance they play Sydney FC in a two-legged tie.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow, exactly.
Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, and so the Premier's plate conversation for me, and I think on the men's side, people are having this same conversation. People are saying, well, who cares? Because Wellington and Mariners, two, you know, traditionally smaller clubs, two teams that when you go back a decade, it gets difficult. The conversation gets emotional. Let's just have a really good final series. And I think that's ultimately, I made a lot of comments last season, especially, you know, the big Adelaide podcast we did about just the legacy. What is the lasting impact of this season? We made some horrendous predictions at the time, but I think if I can keep it safe with what we're looking at now, and because we are at the tail end of the season, I think just keep it simple and have a banging final series, and both competitions are shaping up that way. So that for me is sort of where my head goes to when you ask that question.
Yeah, no, I think that's probably a fair way to end that chat. We'll move on. We've got that's probably going to be the bulk of our podcast. We've got some other topics that we're going to cover as well. Some very good, some unfortunately not so good, as we kind of alluded to before. But we'll start on a positive note. A-League Women's All-Stars. I don't know how people listening to this are going to feel about the All-Stars concept, but me personally, I like it. I'm a big fan of it. I like seeing the best players in the A-League come together and take on world-class opposition and sometimes make them look a bit silly. I know the A-League Men's All-Stars lost against Barca the last time this fixture was played, but I thought they played very well, and I liked seeing Anthony Caceres make some of Barcelona's midfield look like a bunch of idiots. And considering some of the quality in that midfield, that's a very hard thing to do and should not be underestimated. Now we've got the chance to see the likes of Mackenzie Hawksby, Michelle Heyman, Courtney Vine make some of Arsenal's backline look a little bit stupid. So, first of all, A-League Women's All-Stars. I don't know if you're going to be able to get out to it, Matt, but I guess kind of what you're expecting from the match. And do you have any early picks?
So firstly, I won't, because the one big trip that I'm taking this year is actually to your wedding, Cody. So no, I won't be doing anything.
But my wedding, A-League Women's All-Stars.
Oh, yeah. Big toss-up.
I'm praying to God my friend say doesn't listen to this.
Let's just put into perspective something that is very unique. We are talking about the A-League All-Stars for the very first time going up against world-class Australian players, yeah? Who's in that Arsenal team? Who's in the
Of
Arsenal team? We
course,
got
Caitlin Ford, Cooney Cross, Steph Catley.
Steph
It's
Catley,
interesting.
yep.
It's kind of clocked in my head now. The All Stars have never played an Australian player.
Yeah, yes. Back when they had all the, Telstra and Foxtel branding and they played Juventus back in the day, there was technically the crossover with Del Piero. But the inverse has never happened. There's
Yeah.
never been an Australian in a foreign setup that has played an all-star team. That for me is pretty freaking awesome. And when you consider the contrast in a lot of people have sort of pointed out that culturally the Tillies fandom and the people who are going to be going to this game compared to, the potential Euro snobs that'll be there when they play Newcastle United is a completely contrasting audience. And so there's the potential of, 80,000 total attendance being literally 80,000 individual different ticket holders, which I'm exaggerating. I'm exaggerating. But yeah, the concept could sort of fall flat again commercially as it has done in the last few years.
It'll be because they're
But
doing as a double header as well. You've got almost two sets of fans that are going to be going to it because
that's kind of what I'm getting at.
you're going to have a
So
half empty stadium for Newcastle and the men's, and then maybe half empty stadium for Arsenal and the women's. So that's the
no.
interesting part as
I
well.
actually reckon they'll both be like it's only 40,000 at I was about to say Etihad, Jesus.
It might be 50. I think it's closer to
at
50.
Marvel. Okay, it's close to 50. I still think we're talking about like 35 to 40K plus. I don't question me on that. But if they're able to sell it as a doubleheader, cool. I just don't think that's what's going to happen because not
Well,
in a million, eh?
they are doing it as doubleheader.
Yeah, but can you still get individual game tickets? You can,
We'll
right?
find out next week, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I reckon they'll sell it for both. It's weird though, actually. Like, just speaking of personal experience, trying to go through the pre-application form to get the pre-sale, they did ask what I was interested in between the Tottenham and Newcastle game and the All-Stars game. They had the two All-Stars games down separately, so. Do they do that, and how do they police that if someone gets tickets for the men's and then tries to stay for the women's?
Oh, as someone that has been to several sort of multi-sporting events like that, it's actually not difficult to police at all, because if the crowd is big enough, they actually have a session where they clear out all the seating, and then if you're someone who's pulling a runner, the security basically surround every gate so that you can't just sort of. I mean, maybe the. There will probably be viral videos of people making it, hiding in the toilet or something like that. Like, yes, it could happen, but the way that these things are policed and the event that I use as a direct reference to this, not perfect, but I spent most of my summer going to the ATP Cup tennis in Perth, and that was literally like singles game, doubles games, and then the countries would have like a turnover in the afternoon session. And then, you'd see a bunch of people with Brazilian flags walk in and you'd be like, oh, I guess Brazil are playing now. And they would literally, after each event, security would come in, would literally clear the venue out. And then you'd be walking through the gate. And before you know it, you're already like halfway out the entrance. And if you walk downstairs, they all literally ask to see your ticket. So like such a thing could be policed successfully. I've seen it with my own eyes. And I kind of wish I had a better sort of direct reference to
And I guess with the men's game, you're not going to have a lot of people. Well, the men's probably won't come around and do any fan engagement or anything like that. They don't tend to.
not for big ticket items like this, never.
Yeah, I
No.
reckon you'll get it for the women's. I reckon people stay around for that. Yeah, the women's players definitely will.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, maybe. I
It's
mean,
in their culture. It's what they tend to do after games anyway. I reckon they'll have it too.
yeah. I guess you're right. I guess you're right. More to the point, yeah, I would actually like to sort of see these two games stay in their own sort of lane. I think that is the better choice for now, knowing, and I mean, if you don't mind me just going off on my one scheduled tangent for the evening, Cody.
Take it away.
The women's fan base that are attacking the male game, I just want to get a PSA out there to female fans of the game. We're not mansplaining anything to you. Okay. This is our sport. This is our community. You're the one that you love our players and you love us. You come to us, you just share what we have. But what we have is exactly that. It's a collective, male and female. So, I don't really like the hostile approach that a lot of hardened female football fans are taking. And I understand that it is, in most cases, to do with the fact that they see the Matildas as, heroes for really making female sport from like a not political, but certainly a social and cultural grounds, the significance of that in what is considered, if we really want to get that deep about it, like third wave feminism, right? But to that extent, I'm a sport person, right? So I don't give a fuck. I care about people playing my game and my game growing. And that's where like people that really want to be hardened female football fans in that perspective, they put the gate in front of it and they say, no, we're not interested. And there are too many people like that to the point where I think the All-Star game commercially needs to separate to be even better. And when you crunch the numbers, we're talking about a total accumulative amount of people that are, because that Arsenal women's game, it will be bloody popular. People probably don't realize it now, but it will be. It will be hugely, hugely popular with the amount of women that are really getting around the women's game at the moment. Because I mean, like, it's huge. I know that like Optus subscriptions to watch the Women's Super League and things have gone gangbusters as well. This goes beyond the Matildas. It does. But at the same time, as much as I would want to commercially see the events separate, I do think we need to have a bigger conversation about a lot of these female football fans and what they think they're doing by, really speaking out about women in sport and the power of that against speaking to, what they think is toxic masculinity and elements of, just male sport being shoved down their throat, essentially, when the reason we bracket these things together, the reason why we're under one label, is because we don't give a fuck about the sort of gender stereotype and what's involved. We care about our sport and our sport growing, regardless of who's playing it and where they're coming from. And in that sense, we are being ultra inclusive. This is the A-Leagues, plural, right? So I really want to speak to that more than anything else, because I think when people talk about like, oh, it could become a security problem and this and that, really fundamentally understand what we're talking about here. Because I
Oh,
think that,
I'm just. Are you? Does this stem from the fact that you're gonna? I mentioned the fact that you're gonna have two separate fans at this game.
yeah, yes,
I mean, it's naturally gonna occur
yeah,
anyway.
it will do, it will do. But what, and that's why I believe they should be ticketed separately. But I'm just speaking to a bigger issue here, which is when you go, there's that one particular Facebook group we all know and love with a lot of very infamous fans getting to know football and exploring things out. And, in our community, we can sit here and have a bit of a laugh about it. But there are people who are getting straight up hostile about this. And these are the people I'm talking about. The people that are going, why the hell is there advertisements for men's football during a Matildas game? Well, I wonder why. You know what I mean? And I don't want my words to be minced here, okay? Because understand that I'm saying,
See,
like,
I think the thing is, when you speak to those sorts of issues, I do think you're speaking about a minority, to be fair.
of course I am.
I don't think there's a majority of people that are
Of course I
talking that. I
am.
think there's, it's a, but there's one, there's extreme minorities in every aspect. You can say there's extreme minorities in men's, it's probably not a minority in men's football. It's just a
No, but
less than
address,
majority
but
of
hold
people
on, but
that
hold on.
are, that do hold sexist views.
Yeah, and I want to address these people because it's all well and good actually pointing out issues with, toxic masculinity in like a male sporting environment, whatever. But the people that get straight up hostile about it, that don't understand why women's teams have to have male team branding and things like that, like the people that question that just have no idea what they're talking about. Because it's this, the sporting bodies don't sit here and go, this is the female division of the men's team. That's not the point of what it's there to do. And especially in the case of the Socceroos and Matildas, like the FA is intertwined. It is one body. And a lot of people have really, really been struggling with that and getting straight up hostile about it. It's odd, but it is a minority. You're right. It's a minority of voices on this particular topic that are being hostile about it. I just think that it is a growing concern with the byproduct of this increased fandom that we have for the Matildas, for Australian footballers overseas that didn't previously exist.
Yeah, I get what you mean in a sense. I'm going to track it back to what I asked you before. Do you have any shouts for the A-League Women's All-Stars?
For the team?
Yeah. Just go way off topic.
Probably
it's a very sharp turn backwards. No, it is one that I want to make.
Speaking of women who inspire me, Peter Trumas, absolutely. If you want the Garang Kuol, funnily enough, also a Mariner in this case, if you want the Garang Kuol game, you know, breakout star from the Barcelona game, it's absolutely Peter Trumas on paper. For someone of her age to have broken out in the fashion that she did, she's already made it big for her country. She has been like the one of the really, really big star players in that Mariners unit, a big reason that they've come forward in the way that they have. Would I drop short of putting her on the starting 11? Probably get her to have some minutes against Arsenal. Absolutely. Think about what that does. She's probably already being scouted by the WSL and wherever else. Let's be honest about it. I mean, she possesses a lot of talent.
I think we're fortunate with the women's, though. They do have an environment where they can grow until they hit that kind of 2021 age before you kind of need to make that move overseas. But she keeps going the way she's going. She could have 3 years in the A-League where she's...
Yeah, but we don't want to sit there and be complacent about that. Because if we're able to produce players at an even younger age to go overseas, I mean, how old was Mary Fowler when she left?
I think she's closer to 17, 18.
Precisely my point.
I'm thinking because she also broke out when she was 15.
Yeah, but that's precisely my point. Don't sit there and go, oh, well, she can have home comforts. No, no, no.
But you look at players like Sarah Hunter as well.
Home comforts are what got the Socceroos in a very, very difficult period. Let's not make the same mistake with the Matildas. You know what I mean? And that's – if Peter Trumas puts in a good performance against Arsenal, like she is the memorable character to come out of this game. People remember that All-Stars game. People remember the really cool white and gold jerseys. I actually think it was quite a successful event, all things considered. And Garang Kuol was a big part of the legacy of that game. So I'm just thinking out loud here. I'm thinking teenage footballer. She's the obvious name for me.
It is one thing that excites me about All-Stars games, seeing those kind of young players kind of break out and make a name for themselves in front of a larger crowd than what they would have previously or just in a normal league game. Obviously, you're going to have your obvious names. You'll have Tamika Gallup. You'll have Courtney Vine. If Lydia Williams is fit again, maybe she comes into the side as well. You have your obvious Matildas. Michelle Heyman should be there as well. It'll be interesting to see if you have room for players like Sophie Harding, Holly Kaspers from the Wanderers. I'd even a young player that's probably impressed me recently is Kaylee Talahenica, someone that's really come in the Sydney Derby. She was able to put on a fantastic performance, won a penalty, got a goal. There's a lot of players. There's a massive pool of players you could pick from that genuinely have the quality to play in this match.
Just on the previous note you made, Courtney Vine will probably captain the squad. I would suspect maybe Michelle Heyman to be there as well. But I would actually implore them to not go too Matildas heavy because it's sort of redundant. It actually sort of ruins the point of the squad. And again, we're in a unique position where we have a really high caliber of Australian players playing overseas, but we also have a fair chunk of Matildas in what would be an A-League's 11. And I don't, because think about the fact that these players are already really well known. And a lot of the fandom in the way that it is are expecting to see a lot of these players up front, which is why I think they're naturally going to give Courtney the armband. But I don't go in that direction. Don't make it all about the Matildas fandom. Make it an opportunity for these like fans who are really, really big on their female football at the moment to learn even more names. Do you know what I mean? Like the same way Caitlin Torpy came in.
Because you look at a name like Tamika Gallup, she said she might push for a move to Europe in the lead up to the Olympics, so she may not be available as well.
Yep.
Alex Shidiak, you don't know if she'll stay around or look for a gig somewhere else. So you may have opportunities open up.
Yep. But also just think about the fact that like this crazy Matildas audience know who Caitlin Torpy is because of those Uzbekistan games. and Michelle Heyman as well, which is embarrassing to think about, just given how long she's been on the scene for. But yeah, a lot of those fans, let's be honest about it, they probably did not know who Michelle Heyman was. And what I would like is there's going to be a lot of these more casual supporters, if we can call them that, watching this game because Arsenal's involved. And that's where I'm going to put more players on the map. So that would be my call to arms regarding the game. With regards to any other talent I'd pick, is probably off the top of my head, is a Holly Casper is a good shout.
There's a name that's obvious for you that I'm surprised you haven't rattled off yet.
Yeah, well, Perth players.
Yeah.
They've all become pretty shit in the last few weeks. I don't know if you've noticed.
You wouldn't put Hannah Lowry in there?
No.
Really?
No.
That's 180 for you?
Well, I still think she's the GOAT, but I'm being realistic. Like, she's a GOAT that's currently, like, she's been wounded and she can't travel very far at the moment. You know, she's struggling to do the bar. It's not really coming out at the moment. So she's fair, a wounded.
They'll probably have a rule that they usually do with A-League All-Stars sides. They'll make sure there's one player from every team there. If you're looking at a Perth player, you're probably looking at Hannah Lowry, surely.
Would they go with Millie Farrow for attack?
Oh, you can get better strikers than that, surely.
Yeah, but I'm just thinking with their work rate, you know, the fact that they're going to be on the back foot against Arsenal.
You got other people that...
Anyway, you don't, it's the All-Stars game.
Anisha role.
You don't need to think about it tactically, I suppose. You don't need to think about it that deeply.
I'm not even thinking about it tactically. I'm thinking about it quality-wise. Look at other strikers in the...
No. I just mean with the Millie Farrow, because I was thinking if they're going to be on the back foot, but like, it's not a game that you're actually trying to go... Yeah, it's not a game you're trying to go out and
Emily
win.
Gilnick, Sophie Harding, Michelle Heyman, there's enough strikers there.
Yeah, Sophie Harding would be a good shout, actually. Yeah, but I just, my issue with Hannah, though, is still her style of play. I don't think you actually want that, because I'm not saying that you need to think that deeply about the tactics. You just want talent and you want people who are going to be there for a big televised and, you know, well-attended match. But I still think that there is something in her play style that they will not want. And as much as she is highly influential and very talented, there have been a lot of flaws in her game that have been picked out in the Route 1 football that Gloria have been playing. That's just the reality of the situation. When you give me exciting Perth, yeah, she is insanely talented. I think she hopefully at some point has a move to Europe or, you know, Matilda's Caps somewhere down the line in her future, but she is still, relatively speaking, quite you know, a young girl herself, right? So, yeah, I don't think I would have her in that team. In terms of the Perth players that you'd put, though, would like a Georgia Cassidy or someone who's even younger be a
Georgia
better
Cassidy,
shout?
Maybe. What about Tash Rigby?
No. I'm not thinking veteran. I'm thinking someone like a Georgia Cassidy.
I'm
because
thinking
Georgia
players that can start a right back.
Okay, yeah, but Cassidy's just come from the under-20s camp that was highly successful as well, which is why I refer to her. But yeah, you're probably right, and again, that defensively they're probably stocks that are higher up. A holding midfielder like Hannah, I just can't see it. Maybe with Tashi, and maybe you're right. That would be very, very interesting, because she'd be a shout to captain the side as well with her personality as well.
Yeah, I'm looking at a few younger players. You know, even Macy Fraser from New Zealand.
Yeah,
would be a good option. I'm trying to even think of an Adelaide player that can kind of go into it. I'm a fan of Alani Onsevsky. I don't know if she's hit the heights, so maybe warrants an All-Star selection.
I think she's just struggled. Her and Hannah Blake have just naturally struggled in that Adelaide team.
It's tough. Maybe Nella Tonkin.
Two players that Perth could have really been using recently. Fucking hell.
It's a tough one, but before we move on from this chat, another question I'll put to you. Who would you coach it?
Oh, you're Rachel Hopkins.
Yeah. What about an Emily Husband, based on what she's done this season? Or you want more reputation, I guess. And if you look at that, what about Ante Juric?
Well, that's what I said, Juric. Juric is probably the top shout.
Oh, I thought you said Hopkins.
No, I said Juric or Hopkins.
Oh, I thought you
they're
said
both, they're both
weird.
They're both just very, very experienced, and I think that they both would know enough about all of the players, and they would be a good personality for the players. Emily Husband absolutely would be as well. Would Gareth Smith even? I don't know. But if we actually just take like the top three or four managers in terms of teams in the competition, Neither of the Vinicius are going within miles of that team.
I got a witch out for you, and this is you're gonna laugh at Stan this, and I'm gonna get meme for it. So obviously, so this is the game's the 24th of May. The Matildas don't play till the 31st. I reckon Tony G steps down and goes, I might have a run with them.
Well, he has gotten, because of the injury crisis and things like that, he's actually gotten to know a lot of those girls really well. He was at Wanderers Football Park the other night, was he not?
Yeah, he was there. I was trying to hang around so I could have a chat with him, but he was a busy man. I'll tell you what, he was out there, like I think he was waiting for Amy Harrison, just to have a chat and catch up with her. But he was there, like, signing autographs, taking photos longer than what the players were. He doesn't have to do that. That's out of the goodness of his heart.
His own heart.
There was a lady with him that I'm kind of guessing is his wife that was just standing there waiting around for him.
Yeah,
so,
okay.
You know what? Full credit to him. Like, people question him about in terms of from a tactical sense, and it's warranted. But as a man, probably one of the best personalities we've had coaching.
I'll tell you the Tony G story. I had an independent writer. I'm happy to give him a shout out because he's not actually a football guy, but Lewis Moss from the Inner Sanctum was in the press conference for one of the Perth games for the Olympic qualifying. And he was so pissed off with himself, but he started out addressing Tony and he immediately said the Socceroos. And we were all laughing and like whatever. Tony actually said to him, just like, breathe, like, I don't care, and approached him and everything, and just said, like, literally, like, I don't care, like, it's a mistake that obviously, you know, you're thinking about national teams, you know, you're a young guy, like, don't worry about it. Very caring of an independent reporter. I didn't really have any experience with him like that, even though I covered the whole tournament, and not that I'm salty or anything. I'm really not, but. But
you sound like you're trying to convince yourself.
Testament to the guy that he did that though, because that was a big experience for Lewis in particular. Someone who I've become well acquainted with in the time since as well. So honestly, just shout out to the guy. He takes care and pride in his work no matter where he goes.
Move on to the kind of negative topic that we are looking to cover today. So obviously come out the day we're recording as well. The ownership situation around a couple of A-League clubs are looking fairly dire. And of course, the conversation, especially when it comes to Newcastle Jets, is centered around their men's team. The A-League women's stuff kind of gets to the forefront of Canberra United because there's obviously in the mainstream part of the game, the men's, it's just a prospective team that may not make it to the A-League, but there is a very real football club at the moment playing the women's competition that could be very adversely affected by the fact that there's the APL is struggling to secure an owner for an already existing club. We can start off there because the fact that there's a real possibility Canberra United could be not around from next season when they're already, I guess, I know you said there's flaws behind the scenes and stuff like that, but they're already a functioning club. And because a new club can't be created in another competition, they could be adversely affected for it. I don't know how the APL lets it happen. I don't understand how it gets to this point. I understand Capital Football's been funding it for a long time. Maybe they're not in a position to do that anymore. But when you already have a viable operation going on, you've just got to put a bit of money into it to make another team professional. The reality is they're probably not going to be putting extra money into the women's team than what's already circulating around it at the moment, which that's another issue in itself. How do we end up in a situation where that club's now on the verge of folding? And let's not forget, Michelle Hammond put a thread out saying if there's no word on what's happening in 2 weeks, which I think will be roughly coincide with the end of the season, she's going to be looking elsewhere.
And it makes sense. This is a situation that is not uncommon across Australian sport, dating back to sort of the 80s and the 90s, where you look at the archives. I mean, every single sport in this country went through teams and teams folded and things happened. Every single major code suffered. Basketball has notoriously had, 40 plus teams in its history. The AFL had mergers and teams fold. The NRL had the Super League drama. Football, we've had teams fold as well. And the NSL that existed at that time when money was poor, teams were coming up left, right, and center. Teams were rebranding left, right, and center. To be talking about this in 2024, you know, given that we grew up with, I mean, Cody, you know, speaking specifically as people that are sort of that Gen Z age, sport has been stable essentially our whole lives until now. There's been a revival of, and I think a lot of it is maybe complications post-COVID and whatever else, but especially in the sort of re-attempts to sort of govern on your own and do things on your own and be really bold. This age of professional sport in Australia will go down pretty sourly with a lot of hardworking people, because when you think about what the W League, then W League, was when it founded, it was just built on really sort of humble and low risk means. And in that sense, Canberra United's entire history has, you know, they've been there to never fail. And we're having this conversation and it's hard. It's incredibly hard. Lo and behold, what having a professional team like the Newcastle Jets has meant to what is the hotbed of Australian football. I don't actually need to elaborate on that anymore. If you're someone that cares enough to be listening to this podcast, you care enough to understand the significance of the region to the sport. I don't need to elaborate on that. So to be in this situation, yeah, it stings. And I think for the players are within their means to look at how they can help themselves. You know, start having contract disputes and things like that go on. They're within their rights to do it. But I think for me, it's more the loss of the Canberra United women's program in particular, just given that, again, you know, it was set up to not really fail, because it was set up for capital football with the help of the government to pay part-time wages to people who, you know, players that weren't ever going to be hired on professional contracts. That was the whole cycle under which they existed. And because, you know, football in the ACT has gone so far as to try and get a professional men's team up and running, it's ultimately proven to sort of be, you know, the sort of killer of, well, you know, they're not, obviously, there's nothing official yet, but it could be, you know, the lethal blow towards the women's program and what has been, you know, an insanely successful club by all means, when they didn't even really ask for it. And that is a really, really hard concept to get our head around and to be sold on. So from that perspective, yeah, it's very somber. From the individual level for the players, I don't think you can blame them.
It's hard to contextualize into words and actually try and come up with a cohesive argument about how you get out of this situation, which is, it's a weird one, because the APL is saying it's out of their hands. It's not something that they can, I won't say facilitate, but it's not something that they're directly involved in. But prospective owners are saying that the APL's lack of information around key areas, and look, I'm not a business type. I do have a business degree, but I'm not very good at business, unfortunately. Those 4 years may have been a little bit of a waste. The fact that the reason, at least, that's been provided on their end that this deal is not going through, or that these deals aren't able to get off the ground, is because the APL is not providing key information. I can't speculate what that key information is or what the APL's reasoning is for not being able to provide that. I heard whispers that there was concerns about the fact that there were so many redundancies recently, and look, it probably was a needed move from the APL's perspective. It'd be really, really sad if that's what kind of holds back, I won't say a historic club like the Jets, but a club like the Jets, who do represent a very historical area in terms of football in this country. If that's what holds them back, because the APL's in a position where they're struggling to get themselves together. I don't want to say it calls into question, maybe not the legitimacy, but how well the APL has done in operating itself and being responsible for itself as a football league and a group of football clubs. But since the unbundling from the FA, and Matt, I don't know how much you're going to agree with this. I don't know what your thoughts are on it exactly, but I guess everyone was kind of hoping it would transcend Australian football and that these clubs would be released from the shackles that they had previously and that they'd be able to grow exponentially. The reality is quite the opposite has happened. I won't say a lot of clubs have regressed. Some clubs have done really, really well in that period. have they done well because of the APL's unbundling, or have they done well because clubs as a business entity have found strategies that generally work for them? And I speak purely to the Mariners running a very cost-effective strategy on the business side of things while also being able to maintain a very good football team. And the reality is, it almost seems like the moment they started investing less was when they started getting more out of what they were as a football club.
Yeah.
I don't know what I was going to say next. So yeah, please.
Okay. No. I actually think that this is important because we've had a colleague of ours drop short of basically saying, just fucking give it back to the FA. And I'm not going to lie to you. This becomes a very, very complex conversation that's above our pay grade. It's above bloody Simon Hill's pay grade, for goodness sake. But we go back to the origins of why this whole conversation around independence started. And the issue is that when independence happened, compared to when independence was needed, there was actually a three-year window in between when everything sparked up with the lowies. By my calculations, was 17-18. Okay, we didn't get independence until 2021. That's where the mistake was made. The 3 year gap that sort of occurred in between, and by all means, we had like a really, really successful commercial, couple of years there as well, because that was when shit like A-League Monopoly started popping up. We had a grand final sellout in Newcastle, a grand final sellout in Perth. Like, things started happening. And then when the unbundling came, the league got even more stale than it already had been. And that was tough. That was really, really tough. And I think independence was the right idea. And I think if you tell football people in 2017 what was going to happen, they would have been probably shocked by that. If you tell any of our 2017 selves that the APL would be in the situation where it is now, and that there would be a public statement basically saying that the Newcastle Jets and Canberra United could fold, I think it had taken of us all a shit ton by surprise, because none of us could have predicted the APL ending up having the level of incompetence that it did have. And none of us could have imagined that the FA in the years thereafter were actually going to steady the ship and become kind of good. you understand what I'm saying?
Well, you talk in that 3 year period as well. That was when James Johnson came into the role. And I think, look, I don't know.
And how much he's divided. Greg O'Rourke stayed around as well.
Very, very well.
Yeah, Greg O'Rourke, I still regard to this day as one of the best sports administrators. Dude comes from fucking PepsiCo and ends up being like one of the most pure and beloved voices in football in Australia. Like you know what I mean? It was a weirdly stable period for the game, and I don't think any of us could have predicted what was going to happen thereafter. So we have to apply a lot of logic, a lot of thought, and the Jets fans that I do know are fucking hostile about this, with every right, as fans at least. But understand the nuance that's applied to this, because the A-League that existed when things were like really bad and the boycotts happened and everything else, it actually had a bit of evolving to do, and steps were taken in the right direction at the wrong time. No one is going to have that lens. No one is going to be sympathetic. People can't think about what happened 3 weeks ago. They're not going to be thinking about what happened 7 years ago. Do you know what I mean?
It doesn't matter what happened 7 years ago. The point is, if you're told your club's going to fold tomorrow, it doesn't matter what happened 7 years ago, whether it was the right steps or the wrong steps. The steps that you're currently going in are clearly the wrong steps.
Yeah. No, I get that. But I'm speaking to the fact that, like this is not a black and white issue. Do you know what I mean? It's not. And we can't sit here. Not,
but in a way as well, you can't be in a position where you're letting clubs potentially go under.
No, but again, I'm sympathetic to the reasoning that we're here. And it was mostly to do with the fact that the APL was formed and ended up being an absolute shell of what we wanted it to be and what we thought it could be. Okay. Because again, I need to stress this. Go to A-League fans in the mid to late 2010s and ask them, what do you want? Besides promotion and relegation, which even then the NSD is on the cards, they would have said, we want independence, we want expansion. We got both of those things, yeah? The FA and the A-League delivered on its promise. We got what people asked for. We're even halfway through the third thing that they really wanted. So in that perspective, it's important to understand what decisions were made and what went wrong. Like, I'm sorry, but like, you know, it's pretty shocking, but it requires a fair shake of sympathy. I'm sorry to do that. I've already gone
sympathy to the APL or the situation as a whole.
The situation as a whole.
And okay, yeah. Look, I was going to say, look, there's good people in the APL. I've got to preface that. I'm not going to sit here and trash on every single corner of it because I've spoken to people within the organisation. There's some great people that care yes. about the game that want to see it flourish. But you've got to come to a point where you question their direction as an organization. And unfortunately, that comes from the people very, very far at the top. No one that obviously me and you, Matt, are going to be privy to. We get, I won't say low-level employees, but the ones that are responsible for communicating with media. They're the ones that we come face-to-face with more often than not. And at least for the most part, at least in my experience, those people are genuinely good people.
Yes, it's, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
Unfortunately, I think we're in a position where there probably has been instances, and Matt, you know this better than what I do, because you do tend to know the background of these people, but I don't know how many people at the top have been genuine football people and whether they've made
decisions. Look, if you ask me, do I see a difference between Stephen Conroy and David Gallop? Honestly, no.
That's a bit damning, because Stephen Conroy is meant to be someone that is a hardened football fan.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, and no doubt, I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just saying it's kind of
sad. No doubt that he is. But like, when you put practice, when you put theory into practice, is what I'm trying to say. You know, these things are always just going to struggle to work. They don't just magically work because they think they'll work. And this takes me back to my whole point. Go ask the football fans from over 5 years ago what they want, and we've actually delivered on what they want. So,
what you wish for, I guess, eh?
Yeah, yeah.
Some
what a great note to finish on, eh?
We're not finished yet. This is actually something that I know you wanted to talk about. We'll give it 5 minutes, and it's mainly because there are a number of players that did go to the under-20s Asian Cup, as we did mention before. That, and I think you got to give them credit because they went there, they got to a third-place finish. I think they were impressive. I don't know how much of the tournament you saw, but I want to talk about the talents coming out of that because, obviously, aside from Ellie Belton, all of them are A-League players.
Yeah.
Is anyone that impressed you or anyone that surprised you? I've got a name for who kind of surprised me, but in terms of impressed, I think you've got to look at the fact that there was a large contingent, or a good contingent of 16-year-olds that were able to step up into an age group 4 years their senior, Dos Santos, Matty Caspers, a couple of them.
Mm-hmm.
But I genuinely thought
I've got one from left field.
Yeah,
Naomi Chinnema.
I was actually just about to say that name. Great mind single. But yeah, no, she was fantastic as well. Someone that probably took me by surprise. Someone that probably looked the most mature, I guess, in a way.
Yeah, someone that applied a lot of the practice of being in a really competent city camp and all of the benefits that come with being part of the city football group, and applied that into a tournament scenario. And yeah, she really stepped up. She stepped up in a really big way, just mentally, but also she just played really well at each time of asking. And I think it's actually quite significant that she was the one that scored the winner against South Korea in the first game, of course. I think someone that has the potential to really be a name for the future in that regard. But my biggest takeaway from this tournament is how, in typical AFC OFC fashion, it was a farce. But I
like the tournament itself.
Yeah, the tournament was awful. The tournament was awful.
Look at the first game we had to play in. The snow thick about 2 or 3 inches. Yeah. That's ridiculous.
But I mean, Cody, we had to beat Uzbekistan and Chinese Taipei to qualify for the World Cup. We didn't even have to play a knockout game to
To be
qualify
fair,
for the World
if
Cup.
four teams qualifying for a World Cup should be good for the AFC. I think that's what they
Oh,
should be doing.
no, it is. It
It'd be
is.
nice if we're
And
playing
that
in
goes to
that
show.
that wasn't an 8-team tournament.
But the issue is this, right? The AFC has shit tons of depth in women's football, but simultaneously no depth at all because East Asia is really stacked, but the whole confederation of, 40 whatever teams, none of them have competent female programs. And that's where we end up with something like this happening, where you need to rely on what is essentially your second 11 with the under 20s, and like 7.5 teams can do it. So I'm just saying it's rough. And yeah, it's just the idea that we had to basically smash two minnows, and even then the Chinese Taipei game, the conditions were tough. Even then, they had to play in some really, really uncomfortable conditions. So I wasn't expecting them to go out there and smack a lot of goals past them. But for the way they performed over the whole, I mean, it was kind of weird that they went from, well, we need these games to qualify for the World Cup. Okay, we qualified for the World Cup. Those weren't hard games too. You have this really big crunch match against Japan. They got pummeled. Let's not make a mistake of that. It was 33 shots to one at one point.
I
So you're
think
going
one thing
from,
you've
you're
got to
going
take into
from.
context that Japan game. I remember on the broadcast they mentioned that there was about five players in that team that had senior caps already. Australia had one. I think that it's only Jessica Nash that's actually played for the Matildas, and that was basically a token cap before the last World Cup.
No, I know what you're getting at. I know what you're getting at, but
And we also had a very, very young team as well in reality. So Zara Cruz is another one that's kind of in that under 17s age bracket.
I get what you mean, but what I'm more or less pointing out is the contrast between that and the games we actually played to get through, and then we beat South Korea twice on either side, which is good to be at a good competitive level. But that's the only thing of value we actually took because we were too far below Japan's level for that game to mean anything. We were too far above Uzbekistan and Chinese Taipei's level for that game to mean anything. And ultimately, it's the first game which we even sort of took in a situation where it was 50-50. And then the third place playoff, which we took everything from, which was arguably, especially given the conditions in the first game, the only game of value for the whole tournament.
And funnily
So
enough, I
it's.
think that third place playoff was a bit of a smash and grab as well. South Korea had a lot of chances to go ahead, hit the post multiple
Yeah.
times, a couple open goal misses.
This is what I'm saying. This is what I'm saying. And when we talk about a lot of these tournaments being a farce, I was the only member of the press who covered the Oli Roos first round qualifying. It just, there was nothing of value to take from that tournament, man. I think it's just put these things into perspective. There was talent there that we saw. Yeah, there were players that sort of came out that we saw under certain match situations. And again, credit Naomi, credit Peter for being one of the top scorers in an AFC tournament. Absolutely take the value from that. But I just don't know that we can have a really long-winded conversation about what was taken from a tournament where arguably only one game mattered.
Yeah, I guess in terms of that sense, you can make that. I mean, I just like the fact that there was a lot of players able to step up into a national team setting
It was
and
awesome.
perform
Awesome
well.
seeing
It was an awesome result.
Indiana DeSantis in a national team shirt. And let's not forget that the World Cup in Colombia, how awesome is it to see Linda Caicedo footy? The nation that gave us that, the nation that wanted to host the Senior Women's World Cup behind Australia and New Zealand in 2023 is hosting a FIFA tournament. I think it's going to be awesome. But I'd really like to see our level because when you go back to another tournament I covered, the under 20s, when they were in Costa Rica, there was a really big problem where that opening night win against Costa Rica was amazing. What happened thereafter? They were kind of awkwardly out of their depth, and I don't want that to happen again. But that's where I'm worried about sort of the Japan game and the way that we can actually use it as a development pathway is that we might just be stuck somewhere in between. So the draw is going to be really, really important going forward.
For anyone that's gotten through that, once again, thank you so much. I really do appreciate the support that you guys give us. Be sure to follow the socials, Front Page Football on Twitter, Front PG Football on Instagram, Front PG Football on TikTok, Front Page Football on LinkedIn and Facebook as well. Give us some love. Give us a 5-star rating. You don't like us. What is wrong with you? We have our good content, I promise. Anyway, Matt, you got anything you want to end it on?
Keep on dubbing.
What?
Keep on dubbing.
Keep on dubbing. Okay, I thought he said Bibbon Dabin. I was like, what the fuck is that? Anyway, keep on dubbing. Yeah, keep on dubbing. We've got two fantastic rounds coming up in the A-League Women's, as much as we did get a little bit off track from that at different parts of the podcast. Two fantastic rounds. Be sure to get our support, whoever your local team is. If you're living in the middle of nowhere, Templay is your place to go. And for any updates on the A-League Women's, like I said, I just gave you a whole bunch of socials information, and you've obviously got this podcast, so make sure you're tuning in a couple of weeks. We will see you then.